Welcome to the Next Generation Podcast. Today, we speak with Aaron Spivak. He's the co-founder of Hush Blankets, and they're on track to do $50 million this year selling weighted blankets and sleep accessories. Before Hush Blankets, Aaron ran one of the most popular party bus companies in Canada and also launched a successful fruit juice business that is still doing well with multiple retail locations. We dive into a lot of awesome topics, so stick around and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you like today's episode.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast,
weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for coming on the podcast. For the people who don't know you, could you give a quick rundown of who you are, what is Hush Blankets, and then the current scale of the company?
Sure, yeah. Yes, my name is Aaron Spivak, and my partner and I, we co-founded Hush Blankets in 2018, and we are a sleep company, and our main product is a weighted blanket. And we do it a little differently. It's more premium. We've got weights from like 5 pounds all the way to 35 pounds and 16 different variants in between. We figured out how to make a cooling weighted blanket and an overall bundle. And more recently, we've, at least in Canada, we were able to drop the blankets from the name. So we're just hush.ca in Canada. We're working on hush.com, but we're really becoming an overall sleep company. So we've got a really popular Hush pillow, eye mask and sheets, and really diving into optimizing our sleep because, it is so important.
I've got to imagine that hush.ca was an expensive domain, and hush.com is probably going to cost you even more once you guys get to that scale. That's cool, man. We talked last week for a little bit about what you guys are doing at Hush, and I think, I'm excited to really dive into that part of the interview too. But before we even get to that point, you have actually run a couple of different businesses before getting into the sleep and the blanket game. At what point did you realize that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was ever a moment where you're just like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I think growing up, I was always entrepreneurial, like window cleaning, knocking on like the neighbors, cutting grass, snow shoveling. Unfortunately, I did like repaving of driveways, which was horrible because I didn't know what I was doing. But yeah, I was the lemonade stand guy. I used to make my mom knit hats and sell them, and my party bus company. So I was always doing things, but I never thought of it like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. I just thought of it like there's an opportunity. And I was super uncomfortable asking my parents for money because I got to see how hard they worked for it. So I was like, you got to make some lunch money. So I just kind of figured it out.
And then the party bus company, that was probably kind of your first one that really scaled out, right? From a company perspective.
Yeah. We Party Bus was awesome. We started it when in grade 8 prom and I was able to kind of build that out, organically. It was simply out of a need for, such a pain point. I mean, every year we would order these buses from this phone number on Google, and you didn't know if the guy would show up, and you didn't know, someone had to put their dad's credit card on the line. It was such a horrible process. And I remember me being the organizer in grade 8 and doing that and like telling my dad, like, you got to put your credit card on the line for like 60 kids right now. And he's like, what? So, realizing it was such a pain point, but it was like a necessity. It has to happen every year. I figured that I can be that middleman, and eventually we got our own buses and stuff like that. But I started that in grade 8, and we actually did it all the way until I graduated, actually.
All right. So kind of just really wanted to know this question, because when we were talking about this last week, it's all that I can think of. For prom night, for most guys, it's just like, hey, I'm going to go out with my friends. We're going to go on this party bus. It's going to be a good time. But for girls, a lot of times it's like, this is the night. Like, it's my senior prom night. Like, did you bring a date to the prom? Because I got to imagine that most of your time when you're going to the prom, it was just all focused on like, I am going to make so much money tonight.
Yeah. Like my own prom, was interesting because I used to pack these buses. So I used to they'd sit 45. I'd put like 70 people on it, which is probably a bad idea. But when you're 15, you don't think of the long-term consequences of, thankfully nothing bad happened, but something that could have happened. And I remember from my prom, I was like, my bus is going to have 40 seats or like just be a huge, massive, beautiful bus. And there's only going to be like 20 people on it. So we were like exclusive. We had lots of space. And, but yeah, we had a date. We had it all set up And it was probably the easiest prom because I was there the whole time, as opposed to like trying to manage all these things for my BlackBerry. So it was probably the easiest one and most fun for sure.
How many proms did you guys end up doing at the peak?
We would do like 70 a weekend at the high. We would do, at one point we had, I had every available bus in the city I booked. And it got so bad where there was a few times where, again, like when I would rent, cause I didn't own 70 buses. I think the most we had was like four. So I would, you know, it got so bad where these companies, again, they're so unorganized. They're so old school, like pen and paper. They would out double book buses, but they didn't want to lose me as an account because I was like their feeder system and they would rent back the bus for me. So I would like double flip it because I was like, okay, I can squeeze two buses into one big bus and I'd make things work. But yeah, we would, at one point we were doing probably like 70% of all the proms in the city, until it got too big where it was just like too much of a liability and, you know, things became too real too fast and kind of had to part ways with it.
That's funny. I feel like that's the epitome of a side hustle that all of a sudden gets way bigger than you would expect.
Yeah.
What was the mindset behind like spinning it off or you know, shutting it down and transitioning into some of your other ventures?
The truth is I felt like I was getting too old to be going to these proms and, you know, like it was just like, cause I would go to a lot of these proms. You know, a big thing for us is that I'd collect the money. There was no deposits. I would be on these bus. Like a big selling feature was to the principals, right? The principals would recommend us. I was running Facebook ads, which were doing incredibly well, but I would go to the principal and be like, you know, recommend my company to your prom committee and I will guarantee you there's no drinking on the bus. And for a principal, that's like, what more do you want to hear? Right. So yeah, that's how it grew. But yeah, eventually it was just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
That's amazing. So you were in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're doing 70% of Toronto's proms, which is just kind of a crazy statement just to even say aloud. But I totally understand where even if the money's good, nobody wants to be that super senior at the prom where they're looking over like, wait a minute, didn't he graduate last year? I can completely understand that. So now you've kind of gone from lemonade to paving driveways to putting down, you know, concrete on driveways, it sounds like, all the way to party buses. Now before you even started Hush Blankets as well, you had one other business that we talked about last week that sounded really interesting, and that was your juice business. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. When I was 18, we were athletes, right? We were playing hockey, competing my brother professionally, and we used nutrition as kind of like a secret tool to kind of hack performance. And then, you know, we were always juicing and eating healthy and, you know, we just kind of, you know, through friends and family.
Juicing meaning taking vegetables, not steroids, just throwing that out there.
yeah, we were, I mean, I probably should have, I mean, to get a little bigger, I was pretty small, but yeah, you know, we were just using it. And at the time, like this is 2012, 2013, you know, the healthy alternative to like, you know, a post meal is like Subway or something like that, right? Which we later find out is disgusting. So no offense if you like Subway, but anyways, you know, it's at the time it was like so unique. You know, we were the first, now there's like juices in grocery stores and there's like juice shops and smoothie shops and whatever, but this is 2012, right? This is when I was 18. So we used to juice in our house for like friends, and then it became friends of friends. And then, you know, I think we were like almost 2 years in my mom's basement. Juicing. It got to the point where people are knocking on like my mom's door, like, hey, like, can I get juices here? And I would like, I wish I had a picture of this, because it would have been like one of those like Jeff Bezos Amazon's on the wall photo, you know what I'm talking about, where I had a cash register, like, you know, when you walk into someone's house and there's like a little like stool there for you to like sit on and tie your shoes. We had the same thing, but I had a cash register on it. So like people, like imagine friends coming over and they're like, why do you have a cash register where I'm supposed to sit and tie my shoes? And that's like where I had cash, because people would come in and I'd be like, well, how many do you need? Two? And I'd like punch it in and it would like give them change and stuff or swipe their credit card. And And I probably should have been invested in Square in 2012 because I was using it. Everyone's like, this is the coolest thing ever. But again, if I should have, could have, would have. But yeah, I got to the point where our house was like a juicing facility and it was extremely uncomfortable. But I don't come from a wealthy family. So it's not like, you know, I didn't have the luxury of like, mom, I need 150K to rip a store. Or like, you know, my brothers were older at the time. They might've been 27, I think, but they didn't have, you know, a ton of money, and to open a store costs a lot of money. So we saved for like a year and a half, and opened our store and our first store in the neighborhood. And, you know, we opened a store with about a day and a half of float. And now, like in today's world, in any world, if you open up a restaurant, you need like 6 months float, you know, a minimum.
Can you describe what float is for people?
Yeah. So like essentially you need enough money to keep the train going. And when you open up, you know, any like quick service restaurant like ours or an actual restaurant, you need even more because it takes time. Like, you know, you can run an ad, you can do all this stuff, but like it takes time to get people to come into your restaurant, try it, see if they like it. And then like that needs to happen hundreds of times a day. And it's not common at all for a new concept. And like our name is Revitasize. It's not like ice cream, like Jim's ice cream shop where you walk by and you're like, okay, that's an ice cream shop. I want an ice cream, I'm gonna get it. It's like Revitasize. It's like, what the hell is that? Like, I don't even know what that is, you know? We had cold pressed juice and vinyl on the window. Most people didn't even know what that is either. So they still don't know what that is. So for us, it was really word of mouth. We were fortunate to had a year and a half of customers knocking on my door that, you know, were happy to come to the store finally, because I'm sure it was super awkward to knock on my door at night. And yeah, we were fortunate to sell out on day one. And I remember like we used to sleep in the back of the store. I still got my toothbrush. Actually, still to this day, I got it in the back just for like, you know, memory's sake. But yeah, you learn a lot. You learn a lot that way. But it was nuts. It was a crazy start. And I mean, we're fortunate now to have, you know, 10 locations, and still exists. My, you know, my brothers run it, and my whole family's involved now. So it's really, you know, manifested into a real business.
And so what was the transition then between, I guess you were 18, right, when you started all the juice stuff with your family, and then you go to college after that?
Yeah. So I was playing like really, I don't know how to describe it, like collegiate, college or whatever. Like I was playing like competitive hockey, like 2 years into business. So I would like open the store at like, I don't know, 6:45 in the morning. I would work until like 3-ish. I would go to practice at like 4:35. I'd leave practice at 7, and then I would do night school from like 8 and then till like, I think it was 10, the 3-hour lecture, but I only get there at 8. So I do 8 to 10. I did that for 2 years. So like essentially, but it's not full time school. So it accumulated to like a year of school. And then the second year I did that was actually like in the classes. So I would open the store till like 2, do the practice, then I would be like in the classes, and it wasn't an online thing. And then I remember my last class actually before the day I dropped out was a class on crowdfunding. And I always wanted to do a Kickstarter, and I never got to, I ended up doing a Kickstarter, I guess we can talk about later, but I was so eager to do it because I loved the concept of like people supporting your ideas and your product, and had the video, and like I was so into it. So when I saw this class, like syllabus, I was like, yes, like bam, finally, like micro macro is easy money, but like this is something I'm interested in, you know? So I signed up for the class, teaching the class, you know, he's doing his thing, and like the first exam comes up, and I'm in the process right now of actually doing like my own, like real, like nitty gritty building one out. And I'm learning, you know, I paid, I think it was like $3,000 for this course. And then I'm like, this is what I'm going to use this. I'm going to make it back. I'm going to flip it. You know, I'm going to take this knowledge, I'm going to make money with it. And I'm learning, and I'm doing, and I'm realizing that what I'm learning, I can't be doing because it's not right. And I'm like, I'm going crazy in my mind. So I'm messing with Dean, like I want my money back. It's a scam. I'm going nuts. And then I'm like, you know what? Because he's like, you're too late. You're on the final exam. What do you mean you're getting money back? Like, you know what I mean? So I was like, whatever. I go to the professor, and I'm like, okay, you, between like you and I, like one-on-one, like tell me, what crowdfunding project have you done? Like, I got to see it. And he's like, looks at me and he goes, I've been a professor for 25 years. I just picked up this course. I haven't done anything like in for crowdfunding. And in my head, I'm like, I'm out of here. Like, I'm done.
I'm building an entire career in marketing right now. And you'd be shocked how little I have used the four P's in my day to day. Like, that's all they go and teach you in business school. It's like price, product, promotion, place, or whatever like that. It's like you get brainwashed this stuff for 4 or 5 years. And then next thing you know, you're like, wait a minute. Like, I don't remember learning how to set up a Facebook ad in college.
I love the fact that you asked the dean for a refund, though. That's hilarious.
I got scammed, you know. I was like, I was lucky. I had a portion paid by hockey, but like this course, like I was paying for it. It wasn't even a part. It wouldn't have even contributed to my, like, I guess my degree. It was one of those courses that just like doesn't count because of some political system that doesn't make any sense. But I'm like, I'm going to take it anyway because I need it. I'm going to use it. And I was like, wow, I'm done. Like cheese toast, like kumbaya. I was out. Like I don't think I ever stepped foot on that campus ever. Actually, last time I stepped foot, no, that was it. That was the last time. Like, I'm out of here.
That's hilarious. So actually, you know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I think the entire thesis of this podcast is essentially to find like high performing, successful people who are in their 20s today. And, you know, we're probably like 10 episodes in at this point. And I got to think, like, I can go back and do the math after this, but I think it's like 50% of the people have dropped out, which is pretty remarkable to see that that's definitely a theme with people who want to go and get frustrated with college and then decide to go and do their own thing. Now, quick question before we kind of move on from this is like the other commonality between a lot of these people on a podcast is that a lot of the times their family and their parents are like super supportive over like whatever they do. And they'll go and like a lot of times they're like their parents are entrepreneurs or business owners. So they kind of like learn that from a young age. Was it the same thing with you? Like, were your parents really supportive? And also like what was your whole family background look like?
Yeah. I mean, my parents are immigrant parents and they didn't do the school themselves, which usually writes the narrative of like kids have to do school. Cause I didn't do school, you know, like now you got to do school. My three older brothers, graduated. They all have degrees. And, you know, I would say I'm maybe fortunate. My parents never pushed it. They were kind of like neutral. Like I was in school, it was like, cool. And then when I'm like, I'm out of school, they're like, cool, like whatever, like you do you, you figure it out. I think my dad was probably more angry when I quit hockey than when I quit school. But I think, there was no pressure from them, I would say. I mean, I come from a family from five boys. Maybe they didn't have the energy for it. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm very, very lucky to have, you know, parents that are not riding, like they don't, like my parents don't ride my coattail, you know, if that makes sense. So, you know, whether I became a doctor or the president or a business owner or, you know, a yoga teacher, they're not worried about what they're going to tell their friends, which is, you know, in a lot of cases, like, you know, what parents are worried about, you know, oh, my son is this, like my parents, they're neutral to that. They live kind of their own lives. So I'm lucky with that, but yeah, that's not the case for a lot of people. A lot of people, there's an added pressure and I see it all the time.
I was going to say, I got to imagine the amount of doctors and lawyers that probably fucking hate their lives, but their parents have good dinner party conversations. I got to imagine there's so many of those out there.
Yeah. And it's sad because life is short and, you know, I couldn't imagine doing things that I don't like, you know. It's one of my biggest things. Like I said, I don't like something. It's like, okay, like, how do I get this away from me? Because, you know, like I can see now, like looking back, someone was saying the other day, they're like, you're only 26. I'm like, shit, I feel like I've been working for like 10 years already. And I realized like I have, but like, you know, like I feel like I realized how fast things move. I can't believe it's been 10 years. And I realized like, imagine I didn't like what I was doing. Like I'd be depressed, right? I'd be depressed looking back and like, wow, I've spent 10 years of my life doing something I don't like. So it's really important to index on things that you like and keeps you happy.
It's that early high school graduation from Canada. Don't you guys graduate high school when you're like 16 in Canada? Or am I totally wrong about that?
It depends on your birthday. It could be 17. Yeah.
Okay.
17 or 18.
Right. Really? Wow. Okay. That's fair. I figured in the US it is like kind of all 18, but I mean, that's honestly just such a great point too. I feel like that's, again, the other reason, just going back to the whole podcast thesis, it's like a lot of people think that you kind of have to wait until you're a certain age to go and start doing something. But then you, like, the whole point of this is that I feel like when I find people who are like 26, 23, 28, whatever, like super young people doing really interesting shit, then I'm like, oh damn, like, you don't have to wait until you're 30 to do that. Like, you can, like, you kind of like get a little spark of inspiration to go and want to do the same thing.
Totally.
Did you have Hush Blankets lined up by the time you had graduated, or by the time you dropped out, or you dropped out and now you're like, all right, shit, what am I doing next? And you had a business plan, or because the story of how you met your partner is also pretty fun. Yeah. At least really interesting.
I mean, I always do, like, people do things out of necessity, like, you know, you get a job here, or you go to school here, or, you know, it makes sense. So then I move there, or, you know, I buy that thing because it makes sense. Like, everything needs to make sense. I don't do anything that makes sense. I just kind of do things that feel right, you know? So I remember when I dropped out, I'm like, I wasn't making a lot of money, right? Even though I was 3 years into business, I was probably making like $2,000 or $3,000 a month, maybe. And I mean, that might be a lot of some people, but when you fucking work for so long, it's a lot. It's nothing, right? And I could have worked at Walmart for 3 years and made more money. So, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to move downtown with my buddy. And downtown Toronto is expensive. It's, you know, it's a couple grand a month. So I'm like, I'm going to live on very little. And yeah, made no sense for me to do it. Put me about 35 minutes away from where I needed to work. I was like living at my parents' house. The store was like 5 minutes away. Now I'm 35, 40 minutes away. And spend gas, car, like, nothing made sense, but it felt like I needed to do it. I'm like, I need to get out and just do it. And that was a huge, huge step, because looking back, you know, if it wasn't for that, I would have never have met Lior, right? And I probably would have met Lior, actually, now that I think about it, but he would have never, we would have never connected, right? Because he was on a stage where he dropped out, left his parents' house, blah, 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 built his business. And then I dropped out, wouldn't have left my parents' house, blah, 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 built the business, would have connected. But the fact that we both had very similar stories, we both moved downtown like that, we connected right away. We met at a bar and was like, there's actually one of my other friends who knew him. And he's like, you need to meet this guy, because, like, I don't know anyone like you. And like, it's time. I'm 21 years old with three locations. You know, it's uncommon, right? So we connected right away and we just became friends. We became friends, really good friends. And he actually inspired me watching him. Like, you know, I remember I watched him do webinars for like hundreds of people and then watched like thousands of people buy his course and like while he's on a beach. And I was like, holy, like, this is real life, dude. And I'm here squeezing juices for 10 bucks and you're just like ripping this, like, no problems. I was super captivated by him. And he was, you know, obviously I realized he was super special. But that was it. We were just friends, and I was diving into building the website for Revitasize, and, you know, realizing we could tap into new markets without spending $300,000 on a physical location. And he was helping me, and we were really diving into e-com and sort of realized that there was like trends and things were becoming real. I was trying to sell Cricut protein, and he goes to me and he's like, dude, there's this product that I experienced years ago when I was volunteering at a camp for children with special needs, and no one's done it for adults. Like, this one guy, he's selling gravity blankets. They suck. I bought them. Come check it out. It's awful. But like, there's no one competing with him, and he's laughing. He's doing $8.5 million Kickstarters. And we bought his product. We bought everyone's product. And we're like, wow, like, such a demand for a product like this, but such a horrible product. You know, it's like, imagine this ring light I'm using only came in green. Like, it was just like, I need a ring light, but why is it making my face green? And it was the same thing, right? So we're just like, why don't we make a premium one to satisfy the hundreds of thousands of people who are searching for this every single month? And that's when we, you know, in 2018, we came together and we're like, hey, listen, he has a full-time job. He has Scopely, which is a software, a SaaS business. And I had to open the store every day. I've got, you know, 42 employees. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to open the store at 6 a.m. You're going to work on Scope. And then at 5:00, we're going to get dinner because we don't, you know, entrepreneurs, we don't eat, or at least just us. And then we'll work, you know, we'll build it at night from like 7 till 1. And we'll do that for a year and, you know, see if we can flip the script.
It must feel so. I always talk about this a lot, where like basically the type of business that you go and end up choosing can a lot of the times go and totally dictate how happy you are in that business. Talk about it for a little bit, just sort of like, even if it's just for 30 seconds, on like what it was like going from managing 42 employees in 9 brick and mortar stores where you had to spend $350K to open every new store, to being able to go and theoretically, like when you're selling on e-commerce, you can theoretically get a sale without even having the product on you at all.
Yeah. So what's the question? What's it going in from one to another?
So I guess, yeah. What was your overall experience doing that? And I guess switching over from Revitalize into Hush, because I got to imagine that it was just a huge weight off your chest being able to go and work on something where you can, like, you're in Tulum, Mexico right now. Like you can theoretically do anything you want while still running this business. You don't have 42 employees to go and answer to or have to manage.
Yeah. I mean, real quick. Yeah, there's a huge difference. One, you can scale to the moon fast, and one takes a lot of time. However, one is more volatile, right? So, you know, with Hush, we can go from time, it was like 1 to 3 sales a day, to 100 to 200 sales a day in a very short time frame. But at the same time, you can get, you know, just because you had 100 or 200 or whatever sales a day, like let's say I made 100 sales today, there's nothing, like not a single metric other than if I send an email or try to get people to rebuy, but there's not a single metric that's going to tell me I'm going to get 100 tomorrow. And, you know, e-com is a little bit of a rat race until you build a brand, which is, you know, why it's super and continually focus on building that brand, as opposed to like, you know, retail brick and mortar, you know, your community, you're a community product, right? Like people in your community support you. You have genuine connections with the same amount of people. You see the same faces every day. So yeah, it's harder to scale because there's only X amount of more people coming into the area, but you can kind of build enough relationships and enough habits where you kind of know what you're going to make tomorrow. And it becomes a little bit more consistent, and it's more of a lifestyle business, I'll say, as opposed to like e-com, you can, you know, change lives pretty fast.
I'd love to dive into the actual like nights that you guys are working, right? So you're spending most of the nights building up the website, I'm assuming finding manufacturers, getting samples, ordering products. At what point did you realize that, A, this is going to be bigger than all the stuff you've worked on before? And what did it take to get to that? You know, what did it take to get to that level? Were you guys spending a ton of money on samples and manufacturing, or did you kind of just have a basic website up and you knew in a couple of weeks? What was that process like?
In January 2018, I was like on Lear's couch, and then we're just like, choose a random theme. And it was like a free theme, and we're like, I was like editing photos like from the manufacturer. Like I was just removing the background. I didn't even, like, Canva wasn't even really a thing, or maybe it was. I didn't know about it, but I was doing like background remover. He was writing out the content. I was like, we just put this thing together, and we're like, all right, we need traffic. So we just Google ads and bought up search right away. And we made a sale, I think, the next day. We celebrated like we won the lottery. And then probably lost money on that sale because who knows what our ad spend was. Probably spent more money on the dinner celebrating that sale. But it was, you know, you got to celebrate the small wins. But yeah, like you make a sale, you make another sale. And, you know, I think we looked at each other a few days in and we're like, okay, you know, we need to fulfill these orders. And the weight blankets are big and they're heavy and they're expensive to ship. So we spent like all our money. I think we spent like almost $80,000 buying product. Our manufacturer absolutely rinsed us on pricing looking back. Just took full advantage of us with a smile on her face. And, you know, we paid the bill and we had no idea who was going to accept this container, who was going to ship it for us. We're like, okay, maybe Amazon will do it. You know, I feel like as an entrepreneur, you lie to yourself a little bit sometimes, you know, like I remember I would say like, you know, how are we going to sell this thing? Like worst case scenario. And we were like, we'll do a liquidation sale. I was like, I'll go and stand. We have this like Times Square of Toronto. It's called Dundas Square. And I'm like, I'll go stand at the square and like sell them out of my truck or something. Like, I don't know, like kind of lie to yourself a little bit and make yourself feel better because it's a huge risk, right? Like you sell 3 units, you make $900 and you're like, okay, 80 grand, let's go. It's like, doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, that's also the whole beauty of it. It's like, if you're not, I think risk averse is a proper word. Like, if you're not comfortable with it, it's probably not for you. But we were confident that, you know, we can scale this thing to the moon. We had a lot of plans for creative. None of our competitors were being aggressive on Facebook and Instagram. We wanted to take over Amazon. Like, we had a lot of dreams and aspirations, and you know, once we switched that, like, you know, 7 to 9, 9 to 5, like, I think you're asking when we made that switch. We made that switch when, you know, once that Kickstarter hit and we did 1.5 million in like 30 days, we're just like, holy smokes. Okay. We got to fulfill 10,000 orders. We've never done that in our life.
Yeah. It's like,
we got to spend some time on this, you know?
Was it all in your living room? Like, did you guys just have all the products in your apartment, or did you have a fulfillment center at that point?
So the first container we sent to FBA, because we're like, we're going to just destroy Amazon. Like, we're going to just take over, you know, everyone who ever sold on Amazon, right? Like, I'm going to be number one. And it arrived, and we did essentially, it's called fulfillment. No, it's not fulfillment. Seller fulfilled. So no, not seller fulfilled, whatever. They can ship your Shopify orders.
Yeah.
There's no seller fulfilled is, I don't know, whatever. There's FBA, which we did. So if you buy it on Amazon, they'll ship it. But then there's FBM, but that's what we ship. And then there's another one. You know what it's called? I don't know. Whatever. Anyway.
You're saying we're essentially
going to take over my mind now. But yeah.
Where it integrates in the back end of your Shopify site, Amazon.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't because Shopify hates Amazon. It doesn't integrate. So we actually had a VA every day go into our Shopify, send the order to Amazon, and then once Amazon would send us back the tracking number, she would take it and put it back into Shopify, and then our customer would be like, why the hell did I get a box from Amazon? Because Amazon would obviously take our box, put it in their box. But yeah, that's how we started. And then with that, when that Kickstarter hit, we made the horrible decision of working with the worst 3PL of all time. I'm not gonna hold back. It was like the worst 3PL of all time. And they promised us the moon. We can do this. We can fulfill internationally. We can integrate with your Kickstarter and blah, 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 blah. And they bought us lunch and they this and that. And we shipped them. We shipped them, I think it was like container after container. And they just botched the whole thing. People were getting the wrong this and the wrong that. We probably lost money on that Kickstarter. But it was a learning curve, because all that pain. I mean, like, there's Facebook groups called Hush Scam, like, where they were like wishing each other happy birthday at this point. Like, they're still active and they're just like, our BBB rating. Like, they just, like, every night they would have like a meetup and they'd go, okay, we're going to find a Hush ad and like just destroy them. It was like the worst thing ever.
People are vicious. They're like, if there's anything from selling on the internet, like there was one time we were literally, our Amazon accounts got suspended, like, 2 months within working, because we were like having some friends leave reviews on the listings, which, you know, in hindsight, definitely not the best thing to do. But there is still a seller forum up there somewhere where we posted and we're like, hey, does anyone have any advice on how we can go and get relisted on Amazon? And people like did background researches on like the two of us and like found out what school we went to. And they were like, oh, like went to Northeastern, like must not be a good school. Like, oh, like quit your job now. I hear that like Shaw's Star Market, like the supermarket down the street is hiring. I'm like, dude, who, like, what life do you have? Like, are you really like just this sad and depressed that you just go after people on the internet?
Honestly, it's I remember Leo and I made a video. We made a video to send to all of our backers, like apologizing. We're like, you know, we're going to take accountability, but like, this is what happened. This is how we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it for everybody. And it was a video, and they were like, I think they were like making fun of like what we were wearing. And like, they're like, oh, like Aaron's not talking so much. Like, probably his fault. Like, it was like a crazy, like, it was just,
of course, Aaron wears that stupid green shirt.
Yeah, it was wild. It's like, oh, they look too happy. They have my money. That's why they're so happy. Like, it was crazy. But honestly, like, looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened, because it pushed us off the cliff and it forced us to get our own warehouse. And now we run our own fulfillment, which is really uncommon. in the D2C space. Everyone's using, you know, and you know what I'll say, it probably makes sense because we're in Canada. In the US, there's like incredible 3PL partners that like are just amazing, I'm sure, because there's way more competition. Where in Toronto, there's like maybe a handful of guys. They're not so good. So, but it's been the best thing ever because we've, you know, hindsight in the last 2 years, we've saved a tremendous amount of money. We've been able to ship faster than ever. We're able to do these custom orders. We've been able to grow our retail business. And like, none of that would have been possible if that 3PL actually did a decent job. We probably wouldn't have left. So I'm happy it was kind of so bad that it forced us to kind of build this whole thing. I, you know, we have logistics, like we learned logistics, you know, not common.
Yeah, you get like the Six Sigma certification or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So one question I had is, I'm reading this book right now. It's called Originals. It's like some popular like Adam Grant psychology book or something like that. And one of the things that they're talking about all in the beginning right now is that like there's a big misconception between like entrepreneurs being huge risk takers versus risk mitigators. And like they tell all these stories about like, you know, Bill Gates actually stayed in college like 3 years after founding Microsoft, and like Warby Parker guys like didn't quit their jobs for like the first 4 or 5 years while starting Warby Parker. Like, and it goes on and on to list a bunch of other examples. Now, I feel like people are going to listen to this podcast episode and they're going to see like, okay, Aaron was slinging party buses in high school. He was selling juice out of his parents' basement, and he bought $80,000 worth of weighted blankets before he knew that he could even go and sell that many. I'm curious, and you know, obviously then, you know, you have lunch with a 3PL and then they win you over, and next thing you know, now it screws up the Kickstarter. So I'm curious what you guys kind of did from day one when you were originally getting started to go in and at least mitigate some kind of risk. Cause I think at the end of the day, everyone wants to be like that big, bold, like risk taking, like entrepreneur. Like it's kind of sexy to see on paper. I'm curious if you guys ever had any kind of like contingency plans or things that you put in place to kind of like save face if things went wrong.
Yeah, like a plan B.
Like a plan B, yeah, or even like I guess just like, you know, again, you bought all of this stuff from Chinese suppliers. How are you even sure? Or sorry, I don't know if you manufacture in China actually at all. Maybe you do in Canada, but
we package locally, but we manufacture. Yeah.
You do. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So like even like sending the money to the manufacturer, right? Like how are you going to go and be sure that they're not just gonna be like, thank you, goodbye. Like, were there any yeah. procedures in place, or was it kind of just like you were young and wanted to go and build up a big business, and looking back, maybe you just got lucky a few times?
I mean, you got to have a little bit of insurance in everything. I don't think everything is fully backed. I always think there's a little bit risk, but yeah, like if you're going to order from, you know, Alibaba or whatever, like, you know, you do through trade insurance, you know, you don't try to backdoor and save on the fees. Like you take your insurance, you pay a little bit extra, you know, you pay for the boat insurance in case there's a typhoon or something, you know, like there is always a little bit of an insurance that you never want to use. You know, it's almost like car insurance. You pay for it, but like you never want to use it, you know, and it's, you kind of have the same thing in business. I mean, if we look back, we had, I think like 500 or 700 units on your first boat. We knew we can liquidate them on Amazon in 5 minutes because there was, you know, 100,000 searches a month. You can sell them for cost. I get my money back in a heartbeat, right? It's just the search was there. I can just, you know, I can undercut my competitors out the gate and move on. Kumbaya. That kind of makes you feel good. Do you ever want to actually have to go through that? No. Like that's like probably the worst thing ever, right? It's like, do you want to get into an accident and have, like, you know, you don't. So there's always a plan B. I mean, like for Leo, like Scope Leads like still exists. It's still running. You know, Revised Size is still running. Is it a plan B by any means? No. Like that'd be the worst thing ever. Would be to like close this down and like, you know, like that's never the plan. It's there, and that's why, you know, you make investments. That's why, you know, we buy property or stocks. We diversify because you need to know that we're de-risking. Or like even on a more micro level, like we're trying to de-risk from Facebook and Instagram being one of our only sources of traffic. We're trying to find other sources of traffic. You never want to put all your eggs in one basket. But yeah, I mean, you do need to be, it is uncomfortable still, right? Like taking massive amounts of risk. But yeah, there's always like in the back of your mind, okay, this is what I can do, worst case.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I feel like, that's probably the smart thing to do, right? Like nobody wants to go back and start blending the juice again. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it sounds like it's a great business. Sounds like it's a really solid, like, growing business. But at the end of the day, you want to be able to go and continue scaling up Hush Blankets to really make it what you want it to become.
Connor, we have our story, I think, of our plan, mitigation for our Boston units. I think we've probably already told the story before, but at one point we had a bunch of extra, phone pockets we couldn't sell. So we're like, oh, we're just going to go sell these in person in Boston. We're just going to go walk down the streets during the Boston Marathon and try to sell them out of our backpack. Didn't work.
We sold one over like five hours. This is the whole thing about like sales channels, and Amazon ended up crushing it for us in the long run. But in the short term, we were like, let's give this a shot. And it was terrible.
I'm curious if you don't mind if we could kind of dig into a couple numbers on like what scale you guys are at, like depending on whatever you're comfortable with, if it's revenue or profit or units or growth rates or something there. I'd love to kind of put into perspective for people that might not realize how many blankets you guys sell.
Yeah. I mean, might not even be true anymore, but we were essentially 90% of our business was in Canada, but geez, as of late, it's probably like, could even be like 35% in the US. So the US is growing, which is super exciting because it's been like Morse code for us. It's been so difficult. And to finally see it hit and start to grow is exciting. But yeah, 35% of our business is now kind of in the US, but we're predominantly a Canadian company. We were on the Canadian, Shark Tank, or the OG Shark Tank, which is Dragon's Den in Canada, and kind of like a household name, but we're a household brand. People kind of feel and know us, unlike in the US. We're trying to be a $50 million business this year, which would be like, two and a half X, I think, year over year. And we've been fortunate to, only 2018, we're doing $600,000. So it's moving. It's moving fast. I mean, we're a team of 20, I think, or 22, which isn't that good of a thing. I'd love to be less. I think when people are like, we've got 50 people on our team, I'm like, that sucks. Like, that's,
you're a Hush employee listening to this. Don't worry. You're probably still in good hands.
They know that, we like to keep it smaller and a lot of, funny enough, a lot of people on our team have dreams and aspirations of being entrepreneurs on their own. And we encourage that. But we force people to grow, because, what's the point of doing anything if you're not getting better at it? So a lot of our team are in growth roles. We don't have a lot of pencil pushers. Everyone's has their domain. Everyone's focused. But yeah, that's where we're at from now. We've sold, maybe a couple hundred thousand blankets for sure.
So many blankets.
It's a lot of blankets. Yeah. Like, I was even thinking the other day, I was like, wow, like the warehouse shipped like 800 blankets today in my head. And I'm like, that's not including the 500 retailers that are also probably selling blankets, and I have no idea how much they're actually selling. So it was cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it's our marketing, it's all that. I think it genuinely comes down to just having a really good product, which we are still super anal about. We care so much about the way it's built and the way it feels and the way it actually works. For us, I had a guy match me on LinkedIn the other day, and he's like, dude, like, best sleep of my life. And I was like, boom, that made my whole day. Like, a couple extra sales isn't going to make me any happier.
That's, I gotta say, that's probably the best thing to hear from like selling a product is either A, seeing people use your product without knowing who they are, or just hearing great feedback on it. So you said the product is wonderful, right? You guys spend a ton of time making sure it's a quality product. If you had to pick like one or two other things that led to this growth, you think it was like hiring or marketing and sales, or do you really think it just comes down to making sure you nailed in the product beforehand? Because I'd be confused on how you went from 800K to, hoping to hit 50 million this year. How'd you go from A to B?
I would say, like, looking back, there was like different stages of growth. There was literally stages of growth where it was like, you know, it's the smallest thing moves the needle, you know. I remember, like, we are being like, we're just going to pour a bunch of money into SEO. And like, that's his background. I have no idea what that was at the time. And I was like, cool. He's like, yeah, we're not going to make a dollar for like a year. So you cool with that? And I was like, cool. Like, sure. And then a year goes by and you're like, wow, we're making, you know, we're getting a lot of traffic here from SEO. And it's like, okay, boom, needle moved. Let's keep that, you know, on the fire. And it's okay. We own Google. Cool. Let's try Google Shopping. Boom. Revenue goes up. Cool. You know, let's try Facebook ads. Though, once you start figuring those out, okay, those start to work. It's like, okay, boom, that's another win, you know, another lever of growth. And it's like, okay, let's do a Kickstarter, new product. People love new products. That's like, just they love new products. There's no question. If it's a good product and it makes sense, they love it. So, you know, that was like another boom, like the Kickstarter. It's like, okay, now people are calling us for retail. Okay. And then like, I was like getting on the phone, like, boom, like selling these guys blankets. I was like, okay, if I'm doing this all day, I can't be doing that thing. So we'll hire for retail. And we hired a sales guy, and like lever moved again. And then eventually you kind of tap out all your basics. I feel like those are the basics, right? Like your ads, like your basic ads, you know, you're leveraging those. And we were banned from Amazon. So it's a funny story that you guys were banned too. We were banned for over a year. And we were just, you know, that we felt like we tapped out. And then, you know, then we had the Dragon's Den, which was massive. It doubled the business overnight. So that was another huge lever pull. And you can only imagine what it would be a Shark Tank if you do the same thing. And then, you know, we get an office. Now we have social happening and all these different things happening that aren't really moving the needle. And then, you know, we started hiring. And then, you know, now that we've started hiring the right people, like we're hiring people who are better than us at certain things, right? So it's now they're moving the needle, right? Like I get a message, hey, boom, look at this. And I'm like, wow, like you just quadrupled this or doubled that. And now like our sales team has three guys on it. And one guy's 14 years experience, his first day on the job, he's making sales. I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, so like you start, like there's different stages to the business, right? So like you don't just go from 600,000 to 50 million. We haven't hit 50 million yet, but we're manifesting right now. So maybe we'll play this at the end of the year. But, you know, you just go like overnight. It's just like there's kind of baby steps and baby steps and baby steps. And we're still figuring out, like, you know, we still don't think we're still paying every single day. Like we're reinventing our support. Like we're adding phone support. Like send me an e-commerce brand right now that has phone support. You know, like we're doing things that right. Like that's not like a $200 million business. They probably still don't have phone. Like Nordstrom, I went on today, their phone support was a 3-hour wait. So like there's an account, you know, like I'm testing people. And yeah, and you keep testing and testing. And you just get these small wins and that's how it keeps going. And I don't want to make it sound easy. Like it's boom, boom, boom all the time. There's, you know, when our Kickstarter was running, you don't get paid till after the Kickstarter. I think it's like a week or 2 weeks. Like it's time. Right, but who paid for that whole campaign? Like Leo and I, we had a year and a half of sales, I believe. We dumped our whole bank account from Hush, so a year and a half of work, kumbaya, plus our personal bank accounts again, just to fund the ads to run the Kickstarter that we weren't going to get money on for. You know what I mean? Like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. You got to keep full pedal to the metal, and that's kind of been this. We still bet the farm like every single time. Like we're about to bet the farm in 2 days from now. We bet the farm on the Montreal Canadiens, you know, like that's just the way it is.
I got to know what's happening. So for what it's worth, this podcast episode won't even drop for 2 weeks. So I got to know what's happening 2 days from now. Or can you not share?
It's honestly, it's nothing too special. We're developing slight variations to our existing products and we need to buy them. And you know, we don't buy in like, I don't know, small amounts. Like we're buying like 30, 40 containers at a time and just like organizing those containers. And it's just an absolute nightmare. And it's a tremendous, tremendous amount of money. And when it leaves the account, you just want to crawl into bed and just now don't want to talk to anyone for a month. But yeah,
I like how you describe the different stages of growth because you're totally right. I mean, like you set up that Shopify store and it's like, all right,
stage one. Let's get a goddamn sale. Like, let's prove that we can sell it. Let's prove that we can scale it. And, you know, there's a lot of different components there, whether it's retail, whether it's hiring, whether it's just doing the e-commerce thing, right? Like, you have, it's almost like you have different check boxes. It's like, okay, have we tried Facebook ads? Check. Have we tried SEO? Check. Have we optimized our product page? Check. It's like, okay, great. We did all that stuff. Now, should we get into email marketing? Check. Should we get into SMS marketing? Like, check. So it's like, there's a lot of different levels to the game. You know, I want to ask you about why you got suspended from Amazon for a year, but honestly, like, I just know that the answer is going to be like something that probably wasn't even your fault and just some external circumstance. And Amazon just was being Amazon and decided to go and suspend you guys. So we can just honestly leave it.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. It's the most, it happens all the time. So like, I'm not even surprised when you say it. I feel bad. I want to be respectful about your time, and I only have, I think we got like one or two more questions left. And then we can start wrapping things up. So one of the things I'm really curious about is we sold, I guess, let me take it a step back. We sold cell phone accessories for 4 years. Now we're doing a bunch of different things and selling like everything from Lightroom presets to, automotive portraits, like a bunch of miscellaneous things. Right. And I'll be the first to honestly admit, like, I truthfully do not care much for like the industry, I guess, right? I'm not incredibly passionate about cell phone accessories. Like, I'll be the first to admit that. Now, when from your background though, like, you're selling party buses, you probably like to party and go out, like, have fun, right? Like, you're selling juice, you and your brothers juiced a lot, and now you're selling something to go and improve your sleep. Are you super passionate about all the businesses you start, or are you super passionate about starting businesses? Because I think that there is a pretty clear distinction between the two.
Yeah, I'll say that. Yeah, definitely super passionate. I don't know. Like, I don't think it's fun to like, there's a million ways to make money, right? Like, we can do, like, there's so much arbitrage on the internet. There's so much bullshit you can do to make money. That's just the truth. And once you're like tapped in enough, you kind of know about it. And then it's just, I don't want to say it's easy, because that's rude to the people who, you know, money doesn't come. But it's easier than it seems. And, you know, there comes a certain point where money doesn't move the needle. I think, like, statistically, it's like 70 grand or something like that a year, right? And that's very much true. And then, like, what happens when you do reach your goals? What happens, like, you know, what happens when your automotive thing, you know, sells 100,000? You give one of these, you know, you send him an emoji, do you a screenshot? Do you believe this? You feel good for a minute, and then kumbaya, you're back to on Instagram, right? It doesn't actually, like, it doesn't move the needle long term. For us, like building something special that actually changes people's life, and sometimes it's only for a night, like the party bus, right? Or sometimes, you know, it's an entire lifestyle change for Vitasize, where people are like, now eating better, and you know, there's some people who did like a 2-day cleanse in like 2015, and maybe the cleanse did nothing for them, but like, it kickstarted this whole new lifestyle, and now they're working out every day and they're eating healthy and like whatever, you know. And there's people who suffer, like have horrible, horrible sleeps, and now they're getting good sleeps, which means they're having better days, which means they're having better relationships. And it's like, it's really about having an impact, as like cliche as it sounds, because that's everlasting, right? Like, I can't wait to launch a mattress just so when people sleep on it, they can be like, dude, this mattress is nuts. I live for that, you know? Like, I don't live for the $400. Like, sure, we need, like, the economics needs $400 to keep the train going. No question about it. But like, that $400, like, what am I going to do with that $400 right now? Like, have like food, have like a house, you know, I feel like I always actually wear this shirt in podcasts. Everyone's always seeing the podcast. I'm wearing the same shirts. I have more than one shirt, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't need that much, at least at this stage of my life. Maybe like in 10 years, if you have more, you need more. I get it. But there's a certain limit to it all. So to answer, it's much easier to do businesses that are fun and that actually move the needle. Yeah, that make you feel good. What I mean, what's the whole point? That's why I like making food. I like cooking food, because then like when people eat it, you know, like I'm that guy when they cook you something and like you're about to take your first bite, I'm like looking in the corner, like, what kind of reaction is this guy gonna have right now, you know?
Yeah, that's funny.
So that's how it is, you know, why not?
What advice do you have to the person that hasn't started a business that's listening to this and wants to be in your, you know, in your shoes right now?
Ooh, taste, really. Like, just, you know, I always speak about the businesses that were like became real, but like I started so much shit that just like became nothing, you know, like selling creatine protein and, you know, paraphernalia boxes and just like a bunch of shit, you know, like I did so much stuff that just never amounted to anything. Sometimes never got past the idea phase. Sometimes I bought a domain name and set up a website and like, you know what I mean? Like eventually you try enough things and, you know, throw enough shit at the wall and it sticks. You know, guys that want it, get it, you know, like there's just a certain type of guy. Like I'm talking to you guys and I know, okay, like if you're going to message us in like 2 years from now, like, yo, I have an idea. I'm like, okay, these guys, whatever it is, it's going to work out one way or another. It might not be at the scale in your pitch deck, but it's going to work out, right? Or you're at least going to give it a real crack. So it's like, you know, don't just want it because other people have it, you know. It's not like, yeah, you know, I feel like if you do it for the money, and money's important, don't get me wrong, it doesn't last, right? And then like you get like, and happiness is important, man. It's easy to get sad. It's easy to suck. And like, you do it to impress your friends. You do it to impress mom and dad. You do it to get the girls. Like, the shit all fades, you know, it all. Eventually, we're all old and nobody gives a shit what you do for a living. And you better be happy with what you do for a living because no one else cares, right? So when you're young, people give a shit, right? Like, you're at in your bio, like, at, like, price of this, like, or at this new snack, and everyone's like, oh, you see him, he's starting a new company, and it's like, cool, your friends are probably like, these fucking guys are selling phone things, they're probably broke, and deep in your head you're like, I'm selling hundreds of thousand units, these guys don't even know what the hell we're doing, you know what I'm saying? You guys are laughing about it in your private chats, not telling anybody. You're like, are we gonna tell this guy? Like, I know the conversations because I've been on both sides, right? I've been on the side saying these guys are broken. I've been on the other side, be like, if they only knew, right? So it's, but you guys don't care because if you guys look back, hindsight 2020, it didn't matter what anyone else thought, right? It still right. Doesn't matter till this day. So doing it for the right reasons is important. And then if you're lucky, you can, like, you guys are partners, which is awesome. You have a good relationship and I've got a good relationship too. And it's important. If you're lucky to do it with someone else, it's more fun. I don't think I can ever do like a solo business for a long time. It gets fucking lonely a little bit.
I think I would go depressed really fast.
Yeah, it's not as fun, you know, like, you're like winning with other people, like, you know, like one-on-one sports is fun and all, but like how many fist bumps can you do? Like, I like 2-on-2 better, 3-on-3, it's more fun.
Yeah, 100%. To end this just on a lighter note, right now you are 26?
Yeah, 26.
26, so let's throw out a quick hypothetical here. Flash forward 10 years from now, you're 36 years old. You know what, you did whatever with Hush. Maybe Hush is still growing, maybe you've sold it off at this point. That part's not as important. I guess the bigger question I want to ask is like I don't know, like, it's where do you want to be in 10 years, right? Like I think a lot of people when they're in their 20s don't kind of like lose timelines of perspective and like don't really realize like, hey, we are so young, we have so much opportunity ahead of us. Like, if you could go and map out ideally where you are 10 years from now, where are you at when you're 36?
Good question. I think when I'm 36, I'll look back and think of my 26-year-old as an idiot. Just be like, man, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Because I keep doing that. I was like, wow, I can't believe I used to say this stuff. Right? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I can't believe I used to think that way or do that. So, I mean, every year is new. You learn new things and you create new habits. I mean, yeah, when I'm 36, I'll probably be doing the same thing, you know, whether it be with Hush or a different business or something else. Like, I don't see myself leaving the trenches for too long, maybe for like a small period of time or whatever. But honestly, I have fun. I enjoy it. So, you know, unless I pick up some sort of new passion, like it's like out of nowhere, I can like sing or something that I don't know about, like, this is what I like to do. So try to keep it going.
All right, that's awesome. And before we head off here, where can people find you? Social, email, website, or do you want no one to reach out?
Honestly, for business, the only place I really post is LinkedIn. So it's just like first name, last name, I think. That's how LinkedIn is. On Instagram, it's also first name, dot last name, but I don't post so much business stuff there. But yeah, there's a good place to connect. Website is in Canada, hush.ca, and hushblankets.com.
Buy a blanket.
And yeah, buy a blanket. Why not? Or not, whatever. You know, do buy a blanket if you need a better sleep. Don't buy a blanket if you're just trying to see my email flows. So
you know you're at a solid level of scale when you're the founder and you're not pitching the product anymore at the end of the podcast episode. So respect.
Yeah, I mean, you want it or you don't. Nothing I'm gonna say is gonna change it.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on the episode today.
Thanks for coming on, Aaron.
Podcasting 2021. Love it.